Shakespeare has written, I think, about just about everything. Every kind of season, every kind of place, every kind of romance, you can find some example in Shakespeare. This summer, Bard in the Barracks, among other things, is taking on The Winter's Tale, which seems like a rather ironic choice in the summer. I have with me John Ball. Welcome, John.
Hello.
Shannon Munn. Welcome, Shannon.
Hello.
And Scott Shannon, just to confuse me a bit more. Welcome, Scott.
Howdy.
John, tell me about The Winter's Tale. What is The Winter's Tale and why are we doing it in the summertime?
Well, we're doing it in the summertime because Bard in the Barracks does Shakespeare every summer. And it's one that we haven't done, even though this is our 20th anniversary. It's one of the wonderful final four plays that are often called his romances, Cymbeline, Pericles, and The Tempest being the other ones. And this is actually the only one that Bard has never done. So I thought it was time to do it. And even though, yes, we're performing, you know, through the summer solstice, beginning just before it and finishing in early July. It is a wintry tale in many ways. It begins as a kind of full-on tragedy, sort of like King Lear on overdrive with another foolish king, sort of tearing down and beating up on the people that mean the most to him and destroying his world through his own follies and blinkered approaches. And then it sort of turns into something much more summery partway through. So it becomes more of a comedy. It becomes more of a play about reconciliation, penitence, restoration, reunions. Those all feature in the second half of the play, as well as some very funny comic characters, one who is simply named Clown, another of whom spends most of his time pickpocketing everybody else that he meets. And so the play is really a study in contrasts between a kind of wintry mood and a summery mood. And it ends up somewhere in between, maybe in a kind of autumnal, wistful kind of mood. So I think it's a very appropriate play for us to be doing.
So you're doing it in the summertime. Are you going to dress? This is an Odell Park. Are you going to dress Odell like it's winter somehow?
Not really. We're doing that in some very small and subtle ways. Our set will be decorated, you know, with some details that suggest winter and summer, spring, summer, and then fall, and see if, you know, eagle-eyed audiences notice those. But overall, you know, it is summertime. It may be very warm on some of the days when we're performing. Our audience will be dressed for summer, although summer in the evening, and when they might want to dress for, you know, the odd mosquito or cooler evenings. But we're not sort of embracing the winter part of it, other than through the way the play's script itself does. There's a number of references. There's a famous line in one of the early scenes where a small boy who appears in the play, the son of Scott and Shannon's characters, says, "A sad tale's best for winter," and then proceeds to whisper a story into his mother's ear. And so that's, you know, one of the sort of the central references to it. But there's lots of other references to time and the seasons, and the whole sense of time kind of shifts over the play, including a large leap forward in time of 16 years. And that's quite unusual about this play because, you know, we start with characters at one time and then literally at intermission, 16 years pass in those 15 minutes. And we come back with a whole bunch of new characters, including one who was just born, you know, early on in the earlier part of the play. And is so, now, you know, a teenager in love.
So there's two things there. One, the snow might be referring to the extra gray hairs that might come after 16 years. But also, if you had decided to bring a snow machine, you probably wouldn't be really popular in a summer night to just, you know, throw snowballs at the audience. But I suspect that's probably a little outside the budget.
Yes, for sure.
So let's talk about these characters, starting with you, Shannon. Tell me about, now, I'm assuming this is not a young witch named Hermione. It's an entirely historical Hermione. Tell me about Hermione.
Well, Hermione is the queen. And from my reading of her, I've described her in rehearsals as a lover girl. She just is someone who seems to wear her heart on her sleeve. She's very open and gregarious. And I mean, John and I haven't butted heads, but I have said I find her sometimes quite childlike in her, maybe her openness and her maybe a tiny bit naive sometimes in how open and loving she is. And I just love how she just seems a woman when you first get to know her, just completely at peace with herself and completely at ease with who she is and her role. And then you get to see her suddenly taken away from everything that she's known and held dear and see how she reacts in the complete opposite when everything is gone, everything is stripped away and everything that she had is no more. So she's been a really interesting character to get to know through the process.
That's quite a journey. Is it as much of a head turn for you as it will be for the audience? Do you have to kind of change your mode of thinking, or is it really staying consistent to that character?
No, I think it has been. I think I actually have struggled a bit in this role trying to combine the two. How does someone who is just so full of life and almost a gentleness suddenly turn into someone who has to hold her own in such difficult circumstances and stand up for herself in ways that she's probably never had to do before? And how would someone who maybe is such a tender soul then turn around and exhibit that kind of strength? And that's been something that has been hard for me to kind of wrap my head around, and how do the two coexist? So it has been very interesting for me, and I hope, and I feel like I'm still working on it, and I still think about it every day, even though we're getting closer and closer to opening. And I hope that comes through when we finally do it in front of an audience.
I love how Shakespeare, you know, written hundreds of years ago, still poses these interesting challenges for the actors as well as for complicated stories for the audience, but they can still relate to them. Mm-hmm, we've all had challenges like that. Yeah. Well, Scott, tell me about Leontes. Is this a complete contrast? Is it Leontes, by the way, or Leonce? I don't know how to say that one.
Well, it might vary from voice to voice at times, but I say I do refer to myself by name at times, and I say Leontes. Leontes. Leontes is like Shannon described Hermione, a challenging character, I find, for sure. I've had the opportunity, privilege, and thrill to play a couple of other larger kingly roles. I've got mosquitoes lingering from last night in my bag, flying around my study. Approaching Leontes is a little different than, say, when I had the thrill to do a couple of other big roles like Macbeth and Coriolanus, which are follow a more traditional tragedian arc where, over the course of the play, things just get worse and worse and worse, and they make worse and worse and worse decisions. And gradually this all comes to a head at the end of the play. And in both those plays, I died in my last moments on stage, which was, you know, right near the very final moment of the play. In this play, I make it to the end. I don't want to give it away, but you probably know. If you know the play, you'll know. I don't die this time, so I'm thrilled about that. Leontes kind of goes through this whole arc in the first half of the play, and then he has this other half of the play when he, you know, when we jump up that wide gap of time ahead, 16 years, where he has. Tried to make penitence for the wrongs he did in the first half of the play. So it's a very interesting arc or journey to travel through this time, that everything explodes out by the middle of the play now. And then I have this chance to come back and go, hey, maybe I'm not so bad of a guy. you'll probably think I am in the first half, very much so. By design, and much to my own, I think, Leontes' chagrin as well. He's unraveled very quickly in the first 10 minutes of the play, and then things just get worse and worse for him, the way he's interpreting his situation and the way the misconceptions he's making about things he sees with Hermione and other people in the show. So the paranoia just keeps building and building and building till it comes to a head by the middle of the show. But, so it's quite a fun trip. Yeah.
I'm very curious about this 16-year gap and how do you have to act differently? Do you have to absorb that 16 years in the mannerisms or the costuming or just the way they speak? Or is it like a lot of us where 16 years goes by and we don't realize we've changed at all and we're just trying to be the same people we were 16 years ago?
Yeah, it's a little more the latter, I'd say. I'm not suddenly going from, you know, to becoming an old man, but I am older. And in that time, for me, for my character, he has been at the end of the first half. He, you know, he says he's going to try to make make penitence and for this thing he's done and how sad and terrible he feels about it all and whatnot. So when I come back in the second half, I'm trying to play, I guess, anyway, a more reserved and dour, sad version of the guy that you saw in the first half.
Yeah. Shannon, do you have a transformation you do off screen for this character too?
Well, I do have a transformation, but I don't know how much I'm supposed to give away. It's a rather unexpected transformation. So it maybe doesn't, it requires a different kind of thought process than Scott and the aging and the years. But there is a transformation.
Okay. Well, people can watch out for that. John, why has this play not been done? We've heard both actors talk about how they can be very complex characters and hard to wrap their head around. Is that one of the reasons that maybe this was held off?
Yeah, good question. I mean, we've certainly done plays with challenging roles and complex characters. You know, I think all of the romances have that. The tragedies certainly do, and many of the comedies as well. And we've done, you know, many in all of those genres. quite honestly, this is what probably my favorite Shakespeare play. So it's one that I've been wanting to direct, and there wasn't, you know, but I've been mainly an actor in Bard in the Barracks. I've acted in 20 previous productions. I've directed one, which was another favorite play called Measure for Measure in 2019. But this is a play that I've sort of known and loved since I was an undergraduate and acted in it when I was, you know, 22 years old. And I studied it at that time as well. And then I directed it with a UNB class more recently. So it's just one that I kind of keep coming back to. And I think Len Falkenstein, who for some reason that I can't quite understand, isn't as big a fan of the play as I am, is, you know, was sort of leaving it, I think, for me as one that he wasn't really motivated to take on himself. And I think part of the challenge, and it's one of those challenges that we've been kind of alluding to in this conversation, both Scott and Shannon mentioned it without sort of saying exactly what it was about, which is a kind of irrational jealousy that overtakes Leontes, as Scott said, within about 10 minutes of the beginning of the play. And there's no, you know, and it's a big challenge for directors and actors to figure out how to make that seem believable, how to make it seem motivated, if it's motivated at all, or is it just really, you know, sort of overtaken with this crazed misunderstanding of what's going on around him and how his wife and his best friend are behaving, which is completely innocent and platonic, but they get along well, they're friends, and he kind of misperceives that. And so it's one of the challenges of the play to do that, and it can be difficult, and some audiences and directors can really struggle with that. So I think it's one that, you know, for Len just was a bit of a barrier. He just didn't kind of always feel he could relate to that or kind of know where that comes from. And it's quite different in that regard from, you know, other Shakespeare jealousy plays like Much Ado About Nothing or Othello or Cymbeline, where there's a clear incitement, you know, somebody's inciting someone and showing them evidence or setting up things to make them jealous of their loved one. In this case, it just really comes out of nowhere. So it is dramatically challenging, but we've embraced that challenge, and Scott's doing a fantastic job of making it compelling and believable in those early scenes as we see it gradually build in him and then see what the outcome of that is.
What in particular about this play is so attractive to you that, that clearly it stayed with you all these years?
Yeah, I think it is the mix of elements. You know, it's that mix. I love plays. Measure for Measure is similar. The other one I directed, it's also got a tragic first half and a more comic second half. And there's some awkwardnesses in both plays to how it does its turn. But those can be really fun, and they just give you a lot of scope to make creative decisions, to do interesting things. It's got some really wonderful comic scenes and characters. It's got this whole festive, big, long scene in the second half that takes place at a sheep shearing festival. And there's all these kind of rustic characters, and there's dances and songs and lots of playful stuff. And the of course, the pickpocket shows up there because there's lots of people around. So that character comes around and starts, you know, selling people things and taking things from them. And so then there's the ending. And I think what moved me when I first saw this play, which was a BBC production done in the early 80s that I saw when I was a student before I'd acted in it. And it completely took me by surprise. I thought, because the ending of the play really is one of the most surprising and magical, wonderful endings of any play I know. And it can really be moving in performance, really beautiful to watch, and I think to perform. And so it's there's just such a nice range of tones and themes and moods and qualities in the play, and such a variety of characters and scenes that I don't know. It somehow got into my DNA, and it never quite got away. And I'm still loving it, even watching it every night with this wonderful cast that we have. There's 17 fantastic actors putting on this play with Scott and Shannon as the two leads, really just killing it.
I can clearly hear the enjoyment of this in your voice. Like it's very, very, very evident. Shannon, with all the passion that John is displaying for this, is there extra pressure in getting this right?
Yes.
Compare this to other roles you've done. How does this feel? Is this more challenging or just different?
I would say it's more challenging. For me, it's been more challenging because I think in the roles I've done in the past, there was always a comedic undertone. And I don't feel that so much with Hermione. She's very likable, but there's a seriousness to her, and there's a depth to her that you don't want to make her silly, and you don't want to present her in such a way that maybe the audience will think, well, yeah, like this is what you get. You know, you were being too flirtatious, or you were being too silly, or, you know, so there's this pressure to present her, like I said before, maybe she's a little naive, just innocent, you know? So there's this pressure to present her as this woman of depth and of character who is very caring, and somehow her caring has been misconstrued. So, and because also John loves this play so much, there's this little pressure to make sure you're not the reason that he hates it. So it has been, I think, one of the more challenging things I've done for sure.
Have you seen other productions of this?
No, that's one of, so anytime that I do anything, I stay as far away from any production of it as I can, because I think it's really way too easy, at least for speaking for myself, to start to, like pull even intonation from another actor or body language or anything like that. So I try to just, I don't want any examples in my mind, so I can just try to be as true as possible.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be a challenge, but I also, you know, I would wonder how others have done this if I'm confused about it myself. I would think.
Yeah, I am curious, and I have, you know, I have gone on YouTube, and then like, and then I'll see like the thumbnail, and I'm like, no, don't, because you know you have to fail or succeed on your own merit.
Once so you've done it, and that last it. Night is finished, are you going to then go and start to see what others have done to see?
Well, then I don't even know if I will, because then I might feel bad about myself. I might be like, oh, darn. Yeah. You know what? That was a better way to do it. And oh, you know, shucky darn, I wish I had done that. I'll probably, maybe for, you know, a while, I'll stay away from it. And a few months down the line, I might take a gander.
Now, Scott, same kind of question for you. Did you look at performances of this character, given that you have to approach it with these subtleties? I've seen you play very strident characters. I've seen you play very subtle characters, sneaky characters. What was your approach to capturing this one? And did you look at anybody else's? Did you look at the crypt notes of anybody else?
Well, like Shannon, I normally steer clear of that sort of thing. But I didn't know this play before we began it. I knew of the play, clearly, but I had never read it myself, despite the fact that I've known John for 20 years now. And every time I've spoken to him about Shakespeare, I think I've heard from him that this is his favorite play by Shakespeare in some form or another. If we're talking in any capacity, we were both involved in the inaugural Bard in the Barracks production 20 years ago. So, that's how long I've been knowing that. And I don't know why I never got around to reading it, but I'm very grateful to have done so now. I'm sorry, now I've lost the thread of what I was trying to say.
Well, how did you, find asked me, the character of Leontes? How did you find
about playing it for John? Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm playing it. Yeah. So I like Shannon, I do feel some pressure because it is John's favorite play. But I did need to do a bit of a crash course into it because I didn't know it. And I only had very little time to kind of prepare and move from I was doing a Nasty Shadows show just before this. And so moved into this right away. So I did watch a recent Stratford from Ontario production, and I just kind of needed to get a feel of what this whole play is about, and it was quite magical to watch this. Now, that said, I don't find I'm doing anything like that Leontes is did at all. Like, he's kind of lost in my head. I can't, like, somebody, like, as I try to remember back to the show I watched, I can't even picture him in many of the different moments that we're doing, because I just feel like we've approached it differently. I've approached Leontes differently. I tend to be a little bit more, involved in the thing. Like, that actor was very much more reserved. I am trying to incorporate that. And sometimes, because as we said, Leontes goes back, he's kind of overcome in the first 10 minutes by this event that he thinks he saw or something he heard or and felt in the room. So he's trying to bottle that, and also it's unraveling him. So he has to keep talking to people about this thing that happened and also trying to understand what he's doing himself. So I feel like more so than some of my recent Shakespeare roles, I'm as the actor, I'm given a lot of liberty to go from like extreme like jealousies to like extreme sorrow to extreme clarity, all within the span of 5-6 lines at times. It's quite a head trip to make that happen. Yeah.
Yeah. John, it always feels like when Shakespeare is presented, there's a lot of interpretation to be done, a lot of ways you can do this. I'm always curious about the set and whether there's an other metaphor. Are you playing this one straight to the time period, or is there another metaphor around it?
Yeah, that's great. We're not really sort of layering something on the way Shakespeare sometimes is done. I feel there's enough in the play to wrestle with without having to add a sort of contemporary or external framework. We are doing it in period costume, not a specific period, but certainly costumes that aren't, 20th or 21st century costumes. We're sort of thinking of it as a kind of a fairy tale because there is a fairy tale element to it. The costumes are beautiful. They've been designed by Rebecca Raddix, who's done a number of recent Bard shows, and she's got a great eye, and she's got a whole color palette for the wintry versus the summer and fall parts of the play. We've got a set that complements that. It's quite simple. And this play, unlike every other Bard show that we've done in Odell Park over the years, is a sit down and watch in one place show rather than a walk through the woods and have scenes unfold in different locations show. So we've done that to make the play accessible to more people that might not be up for or capable of the kind of hiking that we often do in these Bard shows. And it's close to the parking lot, close to the lodge, just out in the field. The set's there now, actually, so people might see it if they're playing disc golf. And And then there's also opportunities for interpretation with some of the sort of most distinctive elements of the show, one of which is that there's a scene involving a bear in this play, which is Shakespeare's most famous or notorious stage direction. He has a character sort of at a critical moment as an outcome of all the jealousy plot between Hermione and Leontes, who ends up out in the wilderness. And I won't say much more, but there's a simple stage direction at the end of that scene that says, "Exit, pursued by a bear." And then we learn about the fate that happened to this character. So it's a bit of a challenge for any director or any production to think, how do you stage the bear, you know? And that leads to all kinds of interesting creative things in different productions. I have seen lots of productions of this play. I've probably seen half a dozen professional versions of it, including the Stratford one that Scott mentioned, which is now on video. And I saw last summer in Stratford. They did barely anything with the bear scene. It was one of the only disappointing things about that production. They kind of cheated on it, I think. But we're going full on with the bear scene, and we found, I think, a quite distinctive approach to it that I've never seen done before, that works well with the way we're thinking of the play in terms of its intergenerational themes, its themes about, you know, families and parents and children and husbands and wives and so on. And I won't say much more than that, but it's going to be a fun part, and we've certainly gone for it with the costumes in that regard as well.
I'm somewhat worried about the realism you'll be trying to bring to this, given there was a recent spotting of a bear and three cubs in the city. And I'm thinking now that maybe that was just a pre-rehearsal thing that you had set up and nobody realized.
No, nope, that wasn't us.
Because that would be a bear and family kind of involved. I could talk to you guys forever on this, but I understand you have a scene that we can hear a little bit of the interplay between these characters. John, how do we set up the scene?
Okay, so as I mentioned, Leontes gets irrationally jealous of Hermione, and this is the scene, very dramatic scene, in which he confronts her with his suspicions, his accusations. Completely sure of himself, she is completely taken aback. She had no idea that this is coming. She feels, quite rightly, that she's done nothing to deserve it. But he's sort of doing this, and he's doing this in a public way in front of other lords in the court. It's just an excerpt from that scene, and you'll sort of see how that plays out a bit.
All right. Stage is yours. Scott, you're muted to start with, so that's a great start.
Oh, bad start. Take two. Give me the boy. I am glad you did not nurse him. Though he does bear some signs of me, yet you have too much blood in him.
What is this? Sport?
Bear the boy hence. He shall not come about her. Away with him. Let her sport herself with that she's big with, for 'tis Polixenes that made thee swell thus.
But I'd say he had not, and I'll be sworn you would believe my saying. Howe'er you lean to the nayward.
You, my lords, look on her. Mark her well. Be but about to say, she's a goodly lady, and the justice of your hearts will thereto add, 'tis pity she's not honest. Honorable, praise her but for this her without door form, but be it known from him that has most cause to grieve it should be, she's an adulteress.
Should a villain say so, the most replenished villain in the world, he were as much more villain. You, my lord, do but mistake.
You have mistook, my lady, Polixenes for Leontes. I have said she's an adulteress. I have said with whom? More, she's a traitor, and Camillo of Fedry with her, and one that knows that she's a bedswerver, even as bad as those that vulgars give bold titles. Aye, and privy to this, their late escape.
No, by my life, privy to none of this. How will this grieve you when you shall come to clearer knowledge that you thus have published me? Gentle my lord, you scarce can write me thoroughly then to say you did mistake.
No, if I mistake in those foundations which I build upon, the center is not big enough to bear a schoolboy's top. Away with her to prison. He who shall speak with her, for her, is afar off guilty but that he speaks.
There's some ill planet reigns. I must be patient till the heavens look with an aspect more favorable. Good my lords, I am not prone to weeping, as our sex commonly are, the want of which vain dew perchance shall dry your pities. But I have that honorable grief lodged here, which burns worse than tears can drown. Beseech you all, my lords, with thoughts so qualified as your charity shall best instruct you, measure me, and so the king's will be performed.
Woo! I think we just get hit by an emotional roller coaster or a cannonball or something. Definitely a low moment for the characters in the play, but you can see where the emotion is there, and that's going to be amazing. I would imagine that both of you and maybe the rest of the cast too, you got to take an hour or something after the play is over just to get out of that, because so much emotion, so much. Well, yeah. John, I can see you smiling, so you're obviously very pleased with this. John is the director of the upcoming Bard in the Barracks production of The Winter's Tale. Shannon Munn plays Hermione. Scott Shannon plays Leontes, taking place at the Odell Park. June 18th is the preview performance. The opening night is the 19th, then Thursdays, Fridays, and Mondays until the 3rd of July. I think I got all that right. Go to Bard in the Barracks online to find out more. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Yes, thank you, Mark. Always great.
Yeah.